In this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking with journalist Shayna Alexander about some of her long career as a writer. She was the first woman staff writer at Life magazine. She went to work there in 1951. She was later the first woman columnist. In 1969, she was hired by McCall's, at the time the country's biggest women's magazine, as its first woman editor. Then in 1972, she became the first woman columnist at Newsweek. She's covered a lot of very big stories, including the women's movement, the civil rights movement, Vietnam. She's the author of several books. Her first, Anyone's Daughter, was the story of the kidnapping of newspaper heiress Patty Hearst. She also wrote a book about the trial of Jean Harris. That book is titled Very Much a Lady, and a book about former Miss America Bess Meyerson, titled When She Was Bad. Her most recent book is about elephants. It's titled The Astonishing Elephant and came out just a couple of years ago. She's also authored an autobiography titled Happy Days, My Mother, My Father, My Sister, and Me. And she's going to be visiting the campus next, I believe next week, or perhaps it's week after, to take part in the official celebration of her decision to give all of her personal papers to the University of Illinois Library. And we're pleased that she's spending a little time talking with us this morning by telephone. The number, if you'd like to call in, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana, folks. We also have a toll-free line. And that one is good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. Once again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. That's what you get if you match the numbers and the letters. Toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Ms. Alexander, hello.
Good morning.
Thanks for talking with us today.
Oh, I will enjoy it. And I'll be with you. That date is the 17th of April.
All right. Very good. And that's an event that I think generally people are invited to attend if they're in and around Champaign-Urbana.
Good.
I understand your mother was a writer. She was a journalist. You had an aunt who was a novelist. So you had a couple of role models there. But I would be certain that at the time that you got involved in journalism, there weren't very many women.
That's why you had to read that long intro.
Well, what was it that got you interested in being a writer?
I wasn't interested in being a writer. Being a writer is absolute hell, but I could do it well enough to get a job during one of my college summers, and turned out to be so much fun that I wouldn't go back to Vassar for several terms because this was much better. Finally, I went back and got the degree, I think by mail. Mm. Anyhow, that was all quite a long time ago.
And it was your college degree actually was in anthropology?
Yes. Well, I was only an undergraduate, so you just got a regular, I don't know what it's called. I've never looked at it since.
Early on, how was it working in a career field that primarily was men?
It was wonderful. I was the only woman. And since I enjoy the company of men very much, I had a terrific time. They were all very nice and agreeable to work, fun to work with. And since they were all married, mostly with young children, I didn't at all mind being paid about half what they were paid. I thought that was a fair arrangement. Hmm. But now, of course, that I've been retired for, receiving a pension for a number of years, and the pension amount is 50% of what it might have been, I have a different view. And I'm just telling you this in case you have any young women in your audience, because girls do the same dumb thing today as I did all those years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, it still seems to be the case that there is it shrunk some, but there's still a noticeable wage gap between men and women. Yeah. And I mean, not just in journalism, but I think in all fields of endeavor, there still is.
There probably is, but we're doing our best on your program to eradicate it.
Your dad was a songwriter.
Yes, he was a composer. He wrote the music and not the lyrics. A few big hits that you would know, like Ain't She Sweet and Happy Days Are Here Again, and many other hit songs of the 20s, but those are the two biggies.
So was there ever a time when you felt a pull of maybe being in show business?
No. I have a tin ear, like my mother. But I always heard the piano playing all my life because my father was working. And so when I hear it today, it's a most I still have that piano, and it's a most soothing sound. Anybody's piano is a soothing sound.
Mm. Oh, you have your dad's piano?
Yes.
You don't play?
No. But I have a few good friends.
Mm. We talked about
it needs more exercise than it gets.
We talked about the fact that you know, there weren't a lot of women involved in journalism, weren't a lot of women reporters when you started.
Yes.
That's changed, although my guess would be this: there's still more men, at least the...
I just read this week somewhere that in law school, the girls are now outnumbering the boys. They've passed the 50% the mark. So I'm sure that's happening in other professions as well, journalism, medicine, so on.
Yeah, I suppose I should, you know, maybe I shouldn't advance the, without having checked it out, I guess I shouldn't have advanced the idea. I would be curious to know within journalism just what it is now, whether it's close to 50-50 or maybe more.
I would suspect that the women outnumber the men, but they'll work for less, for one thing.
Do you think that that women... continue to face the same kind of within journalism continue to face the same sort of challenges that you did?
No. I don't think I faced any challenges. I wasn't aware of facing any challenges because of my gender. It just seemed an odd and rather pleasant fact that there weren't any other women around.
Hmm. So you never felt...
Sorry, I have to be so retrograde, but...
No, that's fine. So you didn't feel that there were stories that you couldn't do or assignments
well,
that they wouldn't...
There were stories. There were assignments which I could not get, such as getting to Vietnam, because there were all the other people who wanted to go on our on the staff of Life magazine and Time magazine were men. And the people who made those assignments were men, and they thought that the boys had a better right than I to go there. So I went there twice, and the first time I went as a showgirl in Hello, Dolly.
I read that, and I couldn't pass that one by. How exactly did this come about?
Well, I was in California, and a spy, a friend of mine, a woman producer in New York, phoned me and said, look, David Merrick's production of Hello, Dolly is in Tokyo, and he just convinced LBJ, who at that time was in the hospital recovering from the gallbladder operation, if you remember, if you're able to go back that far in history. Anyhow, Lyndon Johnson had been reelected to the tune of Hello, Lyndon. So David Merrick, the producer of Hello, Dolly, had an in with the president, and he, when his show was canceled by the Russians, it was going to play in Moscow as a State Department cultural, an American State Department cultural offering. We got mad at the Russians, and either they canceled or we did. So Merrick had a show with about, you know, 60 or 70 salaries to pay, and 3 weeks, and nobody, and no place to play. And so he did call the president in the hospital and say, how would you like my show to play your war, Mr. President? And indeed, all that was arranged. And the way they did it was to swear in the entire company, not just performers, but stagehands and backstage people, as a unit of the Signal Corps. And I joined the show just in time to get sworn in. And I think I'm still in the Signal Corps, although I haven't heard from any of these people since 1965.
Well, maybe you might check and see if there's any pension benefits.
That's what I had.
That's that great story. As far as Lyndon Johnson's concerned, I certainly do remember the pictures of him pulling up his shirt to show the...
Yes, that was wonderful David Levine cartoon.
To show the...
His scar was the map of Vietnam.
Oh, yeah, yes, indeed. Indeed, I remember that as well.
Yeah.
Let me introduce again our guest for this part of Focus 580. We're talking with Shayna Alexander. She has had a long career as a journalist and has written for a number of different publications, including Life and Newsweek. She's authored several books. Her most recent, just out a couple of years, is about elephants. And she has decided to give her personal papers, things like notes and manuscripts and articles and other things to the... and photographs.
That was the most appealing part of the university's offer, because I have cartons full of photographs. They're going to sort them out.
And pictures of you with newsmakers and places you've been and so forth?
Yes, that's right. Because I worked for a picture magazine most of that time, and so there are lots of pictures.
Anything in particular that stands out in your mind?
Any photographs? Yes, you with
particular people.
There's one with me and General Westmoreland that is quite spectacular. And there's some made in Australia with me and some kangaroos that I remember liking very much. There are just a jillion of them. You know.
What were the circumstances of the photograph with Westmoreland?
Oh, I was in Vietnam. I had got there as a member of Hello Dolly. And the general had come to welcome the troupe of singers and actors and stagehands and to give his apologies for not being able to join us that evening for dinner because a group of congressmen were arriving the same day, and he had to receive them. And I remember Mr. Merrick saying, "Well, I understand, General. We have our angels, and you have yours." Maybe this didn't play so well on the air. It was quite a remark when he made it. You know, a theatrical angel.
Those are people that come up with the money.
That's it, yes.
That's right. I wanted to, many things I guess I wanted to ask you about. One thing that strikes me is sort of curious when we talk about women and how far they have come is that as late as 1969, the biggest women's magazine in the country had never had a woman's editor. When you went to work for McCall's, you were the first one.
Yes, I believe it was the biggest women's magazine in the world and one of the last because that was a period, it was 1969, did we say that, in which the whole magazine business was changing. Because television was coming in. So those big, fat, large format magazines like McCall's and like Life magazine and the Saturday Evening Post all were becoming dinosaurs almost overnight and went out of business.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think maybe, I hope I have this right, just reading recently that McCall's was finally now is going and that it's going to become Rosie O'Donnell's magazine.
Well, it's been through many incarnations since my day, and I didn't know that, but I knew she was having a magazine, and she's got a lovely title for it, and I wish her very, very well.
Certainly, print is still very important. The New York Times is still the paper of record, and people pay attention to the Times and the Post and so forth, but now that, I wonder how you think things have changed now that broadcasting has come so to dominate the world of
journalism. Well, I think most people now get their news from television newscasters. ABC, Peter Jennings says every night that most people get their news from ABC. And I presume that's mostly television more than radio.
Mm-hmm.
So it's changed a lot. And we get I get the news in my car a great deal when I'm driving. I do read the paper in the morning, but that's because I'm habituated to it. I've done it for so many years that it's unthinkable for me not to go out in the early pre-dawn and pick up the New York Times from my doorstep, you know, from home delivery.
We have a caller, and I expect we may have others. If folks would like to talk with our guest, Shana Alexander, you can pick up the telephone and dial the number here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. Also toll-free anywhere around Illinois, Indiana. You may be listening. If it would be a long-distance call, use that number, the toll-free line, which is 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Urbana, a line number one. Hello.
Hello. I'm curious to know what made you decide to give your papers and photos to the University of Illinois. Is this where you went for asking me that?
I'm glad you asked me because I want to tell everybody that the university got in touch with me and asked for my papers.
Oh.
Which was very nice. Barbara Jones there, who's an archivist and she has many other distinctions, recognized that I really was ahead of the curve. You know, there weren't any other women journalists who had been at it as long as I had been. And she got in touch with me. And all I had to hear was that they were going to sort out the photographs, put them all in glassine envelopes for scholars. And I said, please take the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And four moving men arrived here And so they're already here. Taking cartons out of my house.
So they're already gone, and they're here.
Oh, they're there, yes.
Huh.
I don't know how much sorting she's had an opportunity to do. Or it may be that when I come there next, on the 17th, whenever that is, April 17th, that this stuff will be on exhibition. You know, that I think that's the cause of the event.
Uh-huh. You didn't go to school here then?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. That was
I had no connection with you until I heard from Miss Jones.
Uh-huh. Well, that's amazing. Well, thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. And just mentioning it, you went to Vassar, right?
I did. It was during the war, and we went in 3 years, and it was a quite meaningless experience to me.
Was it at that time kind of a finishing school more than a real education?
It was a highly regarded girl, rather small, all-girls college, which had been started a century before by a brewer in Poughkeepsie named Matthew Vassar.
Huh.
It was very high-ranking, I found it rather stuffy and conservative because I had come from a wonderful school in Manhattan, and so Vassar was like a step back for me. But that was all a long time ago.
Well, I would think that given the way that you grew up with your parents being involved and being around show business and having family friends like the Gershwins, it would have been a very different kind of social milieu to be in after having grown up that way.
That's true. Yes, you're quite right. That piano that I mentioned earlier, my father bought it from George Gershwin. And when my sister was born, because we had to move to a bigger apartment, and I still have it. In fact, I'm looking at it now. Mm. It's in very good shape.
Again, our guest this morning in this hour of focus is Shana Alexander. And if you have questions you'd like to talk with her, you can call us 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. We've talked a little bit about women in journalism and the fact that perhaps women still are lagged behind men in compensation for equal work, all those sorts of things. One of those issues that certainly has interested people involved in the women's movement that you have covered, and I think you had been a longtime advocate of equality for women.
Sure.
Where do you think things stand right now? It's interesting to me that women, particularly younger women, undeniably have benefited from the movement and yet seem very reluctant to identify with it.
I think you're exactly right. Not sure why that is, except that one atavistic thing about women is that they don't like other women very much. They like men. And I remember when I first became editor of McCall's, I went to see my old professor, Margaret Mead, the anthropologist, and I said, is there any difference between men and women, aside from what we see in the mirror when we get dressed? Oh, yes, she said, there's one difference, which is throughout history and in all the tribes of the world. What is that? Women, men in the company of other men are happy people, whether they are warriors or playing golf or whatever they're doing with their buddies. They enjoy male company. Women in all female company are sad. They tell stories of men that ran off and children that died and other melancholy things. They don't like it at all. I don't know why this should happen, but I think it's true. It's still true.
Margaret Mead said that.
She told me that, yes.
Yeah. You don't have any idea why that, if indeed you believe that it's true, you don't have any idea why that's
well,
true?
Well, yes, I do. I mean, women need men in order to procreate and continue the race. And their primary interest is in their children, I think, anyhow, even more than in their mates, and even more than... men are interested in men's children. and that's biology.
Let's talk with someone else, another Urbana caller. This is line one. Hello.
Yes, I'm looking forward to Shana Alexander's arrival on campus, but I understand that Maya Angelou is going to be also on the program, and I'm wondering if... they collaborate or what? I'll hang up.
Oh, I'll tell you. Can you hear me, ma'am?
Yeah, maybe you might not want to hang up, call.
Right.
Hold on. Yeah, go ahead, Shane.
Yeah, Maya is one of my oldest friends. We've been friends for more than 30 years. Very close friends from the moment we met, and she always called me her sister friend, which I didn't know at the time is an African expression of solidarity and love. So when the university asked me to come out, they said, "Who would you like to introduce you?" And I said, "If Maya can make it, that would be the best." And she made it.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I will be there that afternoon.
Good. I'll see you then.
Thank you.
All right. And again, we're about at our midpoint here, talking with Shana Alexander. Her reason for speaking with us, the fact that she has decided to give her personal papers to the University of Illinois Library, and I guess this will be week after next. It'll be on Tuesday, April 17th. She'll be here, and there'll be a special celebration of this to acknowledge that fact. And then after that, her materials are here, will be part of the U of I Library, and I'm sure at some point there will be a kind of a show.
They'll
select some things.
There's a new school which the university is setting up, and the first contributors to it are the Reston family, James Reston and his son, or his father, rather. And they are graduates of the university.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I'm the second person. It's not a journalism school, but I think it's some kind of a media school.
Yeah. That's pretty good company.
It's wonderful company. I'm extremely honored.
I will always remember that some years ago he came and talked.
Reston did.
Reston did. Yeah. And he talked, and it was a large crowd, a lot of journalism faculty and students and so forth. And he talked about his experience as a reporter and different things that you have to do to get the story. And he said, what you have to do, though, is take what I call the dumb boy approach. And everybody laughed. And I thought, now here's an approach that I think will work for me. The dumb boy approach has been working for me for years. And I have to thank Scotty Reston for putting a name on the concept, because
I have to put on fishnet tights.
Well, Sina, I wouldn't have gone that far.
Well, I didn't either.
I also, just in preparation for the interview, I sat down and started reading. I read a few, and now I think I probably will read more, but some of the columns that you wrote for Life that were published in a book, The Feminine Eye, and that was the title of the column. And I guess, you know, one of the things in addition to being struck by the fact that they're really good, I have kind of been struck by how, you know, things really haven't changed all that much.
That's interesting.
Have they? I think somehow, yes, in a way that they have, but the issues, I think, in the last, 30 years or something, I'm not really sure that things have changed very much.
I'm afraid you're right. That's a good observation.
We have, I think, another person getting lined up here. And again, I want to just tell people who are listening that if you're interested in calling in, talking with our guest, you can do that in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. And we also have a toll-free 800-222-9455. If you'd like to talk with Shana Alexander. We do have somebody else here, and this time on our toll-free line. The caller is in southeastern Illinois on line number 4. Hello.
Yes, Ms. Alexander, I wondered, all of the many things that you have done in your life, I wondered if maybe it bugged you that you're probably most famous to the public for your conversations with
darling Jack Kilpatrick.
That's right, yes.
It was a shock to me to discover that more people heard me on one night on television than would read me in maybe a year of Life magazine. So, yes, you're right. But, you know, I quit that show after 5 years. And the reason I did it was that I was touring to promote my first book, which was this Patty Hearst story, Anyone's Daughter. And everywhere I went, I began to realize people were saying the same thing to me. You know, I just happened to pick up your book. I wasn't going to read it. In the beauty parlor or my sister's house. And you know what? It's very good. So finally I said, well, why didn't you think it would be any good? And they all said, because we thought we knew what you were going to say about it. In other words, I had become the house liberal for CBS, which I'm not. I'm a conservative and a radical, but not a liberal. And this was giving me, in my view, a bad name as a writer, so I walked out.
Hmm. Well, thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for the call.
You asked, sir.
Other comments, questions, certainly are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. I mentioned at the beginning of the program in that you had written these, among your books were these three, the one you just talked about, the one that was about Patty Hearst, the one about Jean Harris, and one about Bess Meyerson. And I'm interested in what it is, if there is indeed something that these three women shared in common.
I don't think so. Patty Hearst was a very boring college girl around whom, after she was kidnapped, some amazing things happened, including her so-called brainwashing, and remember when she stuck up the bank and all that. So that was a news story that was irresistible to me. The next one was about Jean Harris, whom I couldn't talk to until she was convicted, and I could visit her in prison because her lawyers during her trial wouldn't allow her to talk to me. And I became very fond of her, and we are still very good friends. And she called me the other day, and I believe she's coming to Champaign-Urbana to this festival.
Really?
Yes. And so what was the third one was Bess Meyerson.
Bess Meyerson.
I was paid by a publisher an amount of money that was too big to turn down.
Yeah. So it wasn't that somehow the fact that you had done these books didn't show any particular inclination to write about these three women because of who they were, but it was more
there were a different set of circumstances. Yeah. One, the first was a news story. The second, I just described Mrs. Harris, and the third was a commercial opportunity that I didn't want to give up.
Yeah. And I guess
the fact that they were women, I was, of course, always more interested in female subjects.
Yeah. The Bess Meyerson book was not particularly successful. Do I remember that right?
Well, it was moderate, only moderate. And she was not convicted, unlike the first two. She had an excellent lawyer, and he got her off. And I think that reduced the sales somewhat.
Yeah. I guess I maybe this is reaching and you wouldn't agree, but I do think that one thing that all of these books are about is the fact that when women, and this may still be true, maybe it was more true in the past, that when women try to break out of the roles that we have set for them, that they get sanctioned for it.
Well, I would just say not when they tried to break. They do. These three did break out. You know, I don't think it was the struggle that got people mad at them. I'm not sure. You know, you're asking me to describe something that's too personal.
Huh. Well, do you feel that happened to you in some way? That is, you ended up having a difficult time because you broke out too?
No, I didn't. I never felt I had a difficult time. I had a fun time. I didn't, as I think I said earlier, I didn't mind being paid less because I wasn't supporting a wife and small children. And I had a wonderful job.
And you never felt that somehow you were being forced to make a choice between having career and having family?
No. No, had I had children, I probably would have stopped.
We have another caller here getting lined up. I just want to make sure people know that you can call in and talk with our guest, Shayna Alexander, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, 800-222-9455. So it would be long-distance call for you. You can use that number. Next person to hear up in line is... again, here locally in Urbana. It's line number one. Hello?
Yeah, I have a couple questions. I was wondering if Shana could, since she describes herself as conservative and radical, I was wondering if she thought, if she was sorry that if there's anything about the 60s she wishes had outlived the decade at all, or is she glad they're over?
I think that's a wonderful question, but I'd have to think about it. I don't have an answer right at the top of my head. The 60s were a very good time. They were a time of breakout and freedom, and I think it was fun to be young in the 60s in a way that it's not fun now. I think young fogies. I'm not attracted to. Some old fogies are okay and kind of a very good company, but young fogies are generally terrible.
You have to give us a definition. What's a young fogey?
Well, you know what an old fogey is.
I think so. I think I'm probably one.
That person's grandson or granddaughter, and if they have the same attitudes and political ideas, they're young fogies.
Okay.
Young, but very conservative.
Okay, I got you.
You see?
I got you.
And actually, I just have another question, too. I was wondering if there was any, since you had a long time period there where you were working with men almost, pretty much exclusively, I was wondering if during that time you recall now, is there anything you think women in general really to have wrong about us guys?
Women in general, what? I didn't quite hear you.
That women in general have wrong.
Oh, I see.
About us.
I mean, a wrong idea. Women have a wrong idea about men.
Yeah. Is there anything that sticks out in your memory?
They were all very, very kind to me. Possibly because I was the only one around, or because men like women, and I was good company. I can't answer.
Okay.
Well, I can't give you an answer that you're looking for. I don't know.
Okay. And last question, and then I guess I'll hang up. This one has to do with your latest book about elephants.
Yes.
Yeah, I read a review. It sounds very interesting. And
please read the book. It's very good.
I'm sure. One of the reviewers mentioned an incident called the Cranbrook incident back in 1926.
Yes, what was that? You have to help me remember.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was an escape, wasn't it?
Right, four elephants.
About nine elephants escaped from a circus
four.
And went wild through the fields in partly Canada and partly somewhere in the northern Midwest.
Yeah, and apparently they did it for 3 weeks.
Yes.
Yeah, and I was...
And finally, some tribal Indians were the ones that got them, I believe.
Was that mostly because the people chasing them were too afraid of them, or...?
I think it was because it was a very sparsely populated region.
Hmm.
And I'm sure the people were also afraid.
Yeah.
But, you know, an elephant will never step on you by mistake. In other words, if you're stepped on or crushed by an elephant, he meant it or she meant it. And almost universally, elephants are not aggressive. They're very gentle animals. Of course, if you're near an aggressive one, you're doomed. But generally, as a veterinarian once said to me, they're the best mothers in the animal kingdom. She said, they'd be a wonderful babysitter for your daughter. You certainly wouldn't want to give her to a chimpanzee.
Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Your interest, I guess, in elephants goes back some years?
When I was a young reporter, I covered the birth of the first baby elephant ever born in a zoo, and that was in Portland, Oregon. And that baby is still there, Packy. Everyone in Portland knows Packy. And he himself has fathered a great many more elephants. And Portland remains, for some series of reasons, the elephant breeding capital of the world.
So that goes back to the 60s. That was in 1962.
I think it was before.
Right?
But in any case, it was so rare. Nobody knew the gestation period of an elephant. Hmm. And that caused me to make 4 trips to Portland, because whenever the veterinarian, Dr. Mayberry, thought that birth was imminent, he would call me and I would jump on a plane. So by the time I made 4 trips, and I did get there on the last trip in time to see this non-event, because an elephant is born the way a cow drops a calf. There isn't any drama to it. By the time I got there, I was very interested in elephants, the 4th trip.
Hmm. Well, for people who want to read this book, it's titled The Astonishing Elephant, and it's published by Random House.
Yes.
And it was published just last year. So certainly the book's out there in the bookstore if you'd like to look at it, and perhaps in the library. And I also want to mention again that our guest, Shana Alexander, is going to be here in Champaign-Urbana on the 17th of April to take part in a celebration of her giving her personal papers to the University of Illinois Library. She is the guest of honor, and indeed Maya Angelou will be here as well to speak. Questions here are welcome, by the way, if you'd like to talk with our guest, 333-WILL or 9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana, folks. If it would be a long-distance call, we do have a toll-free number, 800-222-9455. We have a couple of Chicago callers here in line, starting with line number 4. Hello.
Hi. Since you worked for Life, which was a loose publication, I wonder how was working for Lewis? What sort of a guy was he, if you had contact with him? And this
I was much too lowly.
Oh.
And too female to know him at all. I met him once at a dinner.
And the same goes for Claire Booth Lewis?
Oh, yes, because she wasn't part of it at all.
Uh-huh.
Of the magazine empire. She was busy writing plays. And she, after I left Life and became editor of McCall's, she telephoned me one time and said that she wanted to write some articles for us. And she told me, she said, Shana, you should write a play. You must write a play. I said, why? Because you'll never make so much money in your life, she said. But that was she invited me to lunch in Hawaii. But again, that was long after I had worked for her husband.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and someone else in Chicago here, line 1. Hello.
Well, thank you. You mentioned gestation period a little while ago. Have you another book you're probably going to bring forth?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean gestating a book? Yes, it might. I am. But I'm not going to tell you what it is.
Okay. Well, another question is, speaking of breaking into things, were you among the first that of the gender that broke into the National Press Club? Or am I thinking of another?
I think you're thinking of a Washington...
Oh, well, I didn't know. If,
that was, in a sense, a local event.
Uh-huh. Well,
I never worked in Washington. I've worked in New York and sometimes in California.
Well, you've certainly broken a lot of barriers. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. And again, other questions, welcome. About 10 minutes left, talking with journalist Shana Alexander, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Are you still teaching?
Am I?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, at Southampton College?
I teach at Southampton, and I was meant to teach in North Carolina this past year, and I became ill, and I had to cancel that. But I hope they ask me back, because I love teaching, and to my surprise, there are a few things that I can pass on. You know, I have learned some things that I can use in teaching.
Well, what are your impressions of young journalism students?
Well, I didn't go to journalism school. You know, I kind of fell into it. And I usually have a sort of a smart-ass answer and just say, journalism school is only good if you want to be a publisher. And if you want to be a journalist, go out and get a job on a little paper or a weekly paper, some kind of thing, and just break in. And if you want to be a publisher, you have to inherit the paper. So I felt that journalism schools had a limited use.
Mm-hmm.
But as I've never attended one, I'm not sure.
Well, what are some of the things that you try to pass on to your students based on your experience?
Oh, this would take too long for me to explain why, I'm afraid, but I tell them not to take tape recorders with them unless it's a very critical interview and they're interviewing the president or someone whom you cannot misquote, you know.
Uh-huh.
or a big villain of some sort. Otherwise, you'll do much better with a pad and a notebook and a pencil, because your mind will edit what your subject is telling you, and you will only put down in your notebook the things that strike you as important or interesting. So when the interview is over, you do not now have to play over the whole long, boring, hour-long discussion. You've got a notebook which gives you the essence of it, and you take that to your typewriter or your computer now and try to recreate the scene. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. I guess the one question would be, does one have to be concerned about the fact that you're filtering this thing through your brain and...
No, because you have to filter it through your brain in order to write it. In other words, you remember when Walter Cronkite used to sign off and say, and that's the way it is?
Uh-huh.
He didn't know that that's the way it is. It was the way he thought it was, you know?
Well, I think even he had
said... Oh, he's a wonderful person, so I hope I'm not misstating him.
Oh, no. And I'm sure he would be the first to say that actually he had some misgivings or concerns about
actually,
that
I
himself.
Met him, and we did talk about this, and you're quite right.
Yeah. Well, let's talk with someone else here. We have a caller again in Chicago, line 4. Hello?
Yes, Shane, I'd like to ask you if you knew Hugh Seide very well.
I knew Hugh for many years, not terribly well, because he always worked in Washington.
Okay, I just wondered, because he always seemed to me a pretty level-headed guy, but he has an absolute hatred for Bill Clinton, and I wonder if you could explain it. It's almost like a sanctimonious right-wing zealotry that he has against this man.
I think it's a weird eccentricity, although Bill Clinton is fairly weird himself sometimes, but he offends the essential decency of Hugh Seide in some way that I don't know Seide well enough,
yeah,
about him to speculate as to why that is.
Okay, well, yeah, I thought it was a moral thing, but I just wondered, because the Seide is not a conservative Republican by any means.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
I would describe him, I think, as a liberal Republican.
Okay. Thank you.
But I'm not sure. That may be unfair.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And to Farmer City for somebody else here, line 1. Hello.
Yes, this question's a little on the light side, but I just wanted to, I'm really pleased to be talking with Shane Alexander. About 24 years ago, I had a daughter that I named Shana. And
oh, good.
I think largely the reason was you didn't have to watch a lot of TV to hear your name, and I was kind of struck by the Irish sound of it. I wonder if you could say a little bit about your name.
I can. My name is Yiddish, actually, and it means pretty in Yiddish, or in German it would be schön, and it's just a common Yiddish diminutive that was the nickname, I think, of two of my great-grandmothers, something like that. But then it turned out that the same word, the same name, is the female of John in Irish.
Right.
Sean is John, and Shana is the female of it. Then it turns out that in Cherokee, which is the only Indian tribe that had a written language, I'm told, it means little pony. And finally, I was told that in Thai, it means victory. So it's a nice string of definitions.
Well, thank you very much for the use of your name.
Thank you. I hope, and give her my best.
I will.
All right. She's not a journalist, is she?
No, not yet, anyway.
All right. Well, best to you. Thanks for the call. A couple of minutes here left. If somebody wants to call real quick, we can give you a chance to talk with our guest, Shana Alexander, 333-WILL or 9455 and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Would you like to be covering politics today? Would you like, for example, to be writing about George Bush? No?
No. I'm grateful not to be covering politics today. I don't understand it. I don't like it. No.
What do you think is different about politics now and, say, politics of the 60s?
Less colorful, less fun, less joyous, and grimmer. That's about all I can tell you, you know, off the top of my head.
That politics is less fun and it's more...
Covering politics.
Oh, covering politics, yes. Well, is that because politics has become that way?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Yeah. It certainly seems to be more, well, I don't know, maybe I'm not in a position to judge. I was going to say it seems to be more partisan than it was. At the very least, it seems we have fewer statesmen and a lot more politicians than we used to.
You're probably right, but I don't know about that.
Well, again, we'll talk with some other folks here. Let's go to Aurora, line number 4. Hello.
Yes, hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm sorry that I missed so much of your program due to circumstances in the house today. I think I missed a very, very good program. I wondered if you would have anything to say to the young women of the world or of America, however.
Yes, don't undervalue yourselves. because I find that even today, I speak occasionally at women's colleges and so forth, or co-ed colleges, that women don't ask for as big a salary, for example, as the men do.
Now, why do you think that, and I agree totally with what you said, but why does that happen in our society when they, some of the women worked so hard in the 60s, and here we are in 2000,
ma'am,
and it
still
hasn't happened?
I think it's tragic, and so the little that I can do or say to tell them to value themselves more, I do. I don't know why.
I see that. I have.
We in my generation, I do know why. It would have been or it was considered unfeminine.
Yes.
Too aggressive. But I think girls by now, I hope they're past that, but maybe they're not.
And I wish they would value themselves, and they don't. I see that, as you said, a tragedy.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
All Thank right. you.
Well, we're going to have to stop at this point because we've used our time. And what I want to say to you also, Shana Alexander, thank you very much for talking with us.
I enjoyed talking to all of you. Thank you.
She will be visiting the U of I campus soon on the 17th of April to take part in a celebration and exhibition of the Shana Alexander Collection, marking her decision to give her personal papers to the University of Illinois Library. So that's coming up soon here on this campus.